This is episode 328 of Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast, part of the MKE Tailgate Network. I'm Steve Garshinsky, filling in for a newly married James Langer. And we just want to say congratulations right off the top, because that is an exciting event. So, Paul, Ryan, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm hoping Liverpool plays better. We're watching right now. We're recording on Sunday morning, so they're currently playing and hoping things are going better than they did last time we saw this team.
Yep. Doing well. A standard weekend of kid sports back in full swing. So coached my soccer boys yesterday morning to a thrilling 6-1 victory. Then saw my daughter pull off a tie. So good work. Good week all around. Did well.
So you mentioned on your mini pod that one of the features of coaching this team is the boys have now learned how to swear.
Actually, during the game, and if any parents are listening, you're not, but if you are, I'm not going to rat the kid out, but I did get my first F-bomb on the field from a 10-year-old this game. So that was fun. Good experience.
So
they were swearing in disgust of the way they were playing, or they were using it towards somebody.
They just casually swear as part of normal conversation.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that age, and you kind of know the words and you start to try to fit them in. When adults can't hear. Well, dude, this has been a long time.
No, I'm laughing because
it's been a while.
You do have a child in that age range ish.
I do. Yeah. He started, he had his first baseball game this weekend. I didn't hear any F-bombs, though, luckily.
I will say, on the subject of swearing, if you want to hear the most creative swearing that you will ever hear in your life, combinations of words that you know but have never heard used quite that way in that sequence before, Shogun is fantastic for that. Absolutely fantastic for that. Words in combinations you could never imagine. It's beautiful.
I've heard that's good. I'm doing three-body problem right now, so I got a line.
I would say ditch three-body problem and be a Shogun fanboy. That's where it's at. That's where the cool kids are at.
Fair.
So, but anyways, hey, any advice for James now that he's married?
Don't volunteer to coach youth soccer.
He's got a couple other things to do before he can make that choice.
I know. There are several steps.
That's all I got.
Ryan, anything you've learned over the years?
No, I know nothing.
Just agree and say yes, honey, you're right.
Yes, just agree. Just yes.
Just agree.
Yes.
So, hey, you can become a patron at patreon.com/MKETailgate. $2 a month guarantees you your questions answered on both this podcast and reporting is eligible, which... we have a lot of draft content kind of already in the feed and more coming. Is that correct?
Yes. So we'll have a mini pod every Friday going up to the draft. And we will do at least one real show either this week or next week. Maybe both. We'll see. Kind of depends. This is totally dependent on my work schedule, which has been quite taxing of late. But we'll get in at least one of those shows. So keep an eye out for that. And we are also working on setting up a new feed for everybody at APC who had their podcast killed by SB Nation. So keep an eye out for that. That will be coming as well. It's already active, actually. I posted the last mini pod on it. If you can find it, then you'll know where that is. It's difficult to find right now. I'll post links when it's more solidified. But that is coming as well.
As an OG subscriber to the original feed, I have noticed no differences. So,
and you will not if you stay on that one.
Yeah. Now, hey, don't forget, $5 a month gets you that question priority, plus the exclusive content and the minor league extra with Ryan and new co-host Spencer Michaelis. When's the next? Have you guys debuted a new one?
We haven't yet. No, I recorded my last one with James at the very end of March. So we've got another one coming. We'll do one relatively soon here. We've got a lot of injuries to talk about, like on the minor league side, before we even get into like the stuff going on in the major league level. It's been sort of a plague of locusts so far this year, so we should probably talk about that. Obviously, Jefferson Caro had labrum surgery, so he's out for the year now, and we don't know what he's going to come back like. Though I do feel a little bit better. I was thinking about this, like if he comes back when Jimmy Nelson had a torn labrum and had it repaired, he came back and lost a couple miles an hour off his fastball. Well, if that happens for Caro, he maybe loses a grade, but he already had like a 70 arm. So if he drops to like a 60 arm, okay, it's not ideal. He's not any longer like a defensive weapon at catcher the way that he, you know, was trending to be, but he could still probably catch, right? So I've got a lot of copium going on with that one, but hopefully like he will still be able to catch, I think, as long as the surgery is, you know, modestly successful. But then we also had Brock Wilkin taking 94 to the face and getting a bunch of bones broken, but it sounds like there wasn't a concussion there. So who knows what the timeline on that is yet at this point. And then we found out that Cooper Pratt, after a really good start at A-ball, he went out and broke his pinky this weekend. So, like, it has just been an absolute plague of the best remaining prospects still in the minor leagues. Like, that's pretty much their three of their four or five best hitters all going down for a significant, you know, injury. So it kind of sucks. But after last year, where you had a year where basically everything that could go right on the farm system did go right, this is, I guess, the penance we pay for that. So this is not great, but hopefully everybody's able to come back and be good after all of this nonsense. But well, it sucks.
I'm trying to remember, for Jimmy Nelson, didn't they go in and then find like more damage or is more complicated than they initially expected with him? Like, I'm just hoping that maybe Caro's was a little more straightforward as far as the surgery goes, because Nelson seemed to be like worst case scenario.
Yeah, something like that. I can't remember the exact situation with it. I thought that Jimmy Nelson had a partial tear, and maybe it was more torn than they thought when they got in there, and that's what the negative prognosis on it was or whatever. I think they got in there, and I think Caro has a full tear. So I'm not sure exactly what the prognosis on that is, but yeah, it's none of it's great.
When you're speculating on shoulders, you're starting at bad. And I do think that's right on Nelson. It's just that the odds of such things occurring when you have something like this are so much higher. And that's the problem with shoulders. There's a lot of co-working parts, and there's a lot that can go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll get into some more injury talk, I think, later in the show. Hopefully we can just do it this week and be done with it. That would be ideal, right? Yeah, going forward.
Yeah,
But before we move on, just remember that you can support us in another way by going to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to us, and give us a 5-star review. It's the beginning of the season, so this is a great time to go and give that 5-star review. Paul, will you still read whatever people write?
If I notice it. There hadn't been some for a while. You got to start doing that again, I suppose. But yes, call attention to it.
People have not been putting stuff in there lately.
Yeah.
So you should probably get in there and give your Packers draft hot takes right now, so that way Paul has to read it before the draft hits. That would be a good way to use that. While you're there, be sure to hit the subscribe and follow button. Make sure you never miss an episode. The story of the week was one of the great offensive barrages in franchise history. Over the last 7 days, the Brewers have scored 58 runs in 6 games for an average of 9 1/3 runs per game. That is absurd.
Yes.
It's amazing, because what was it, the Friday night Orioles game? They went down, or no, Saturday they went down, and then they won by like 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were down in that game. They DL hauled it, and then they came roaring back.
Yeah. So their low output over the time was 7 runs, and they've been in double digits in half the games. Overall this year, they're third in MLB in both runs scored and WRC plus. I've got a bunch of questions, so let's just jump right in on them. Ian Pomplin, how long do we have to wait before celebrating an offense that is averaging 6 runs a game? Are you guys ready to celebrate?
I mean, you can celebrate all the time. You can celebrate in real time for good offensive play. So that it's fine. All the questions, to some extent this week, are how long is this going to last and how real is this? But in the spirit of this one, like, when your offense is on a tear, you should be happy about it and just enjoy like the Schwenkers falling in and the massive home runs in the hardest park to hit home runs in Major League Baseball. Like, this is good. This is great. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. Don't wait to celebrate, because it will go away at some point.
Exactly. You're going to miss your window. Get on that.
I mean, yeah, we'll get into more of the sustainability stuff, but like looking at some of the numbers here, they're second in MLB right now in ISO. So it's not that Paul's right. There have been a bunch of stoinkers. There have been, you know, I was commenting during the Saturday game that they got really lucky on a number of things. They had some sequencing stuff go really well for them and just some balls fell in. But they've also been hitting the legitimate crap out of the ball this yep. week. So, you know, enjoy that part of it. We were originally, remember, we were both talking about the fact that we weren't sure if, like, when after the first week, James asked us, like, is the offense going well? Are things okay? Are things good? And our response was, well, yeah, but we'd like to see some power. Well, we got our power. I mean, they're hitting the crap out of the ball, and it's good, and it's fun. So, yes, we can at least say that and be happy about it.
It's interesting what MVP Christian Yelich does to a lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully...
I mean, we complained about the offense the past few seasons, and it's like, well, that was a glaring hole that probably would have made a big difference for those teams.
That is true. He definitely would have made a big difference for those teams. I think it's not all Yelich, though. Like, the support performances have been outstanding as well. It's just that, yes, he is an outlier among outliers so far. Hopefully the back doesn't... you know, impact his performance once he is back from it. But yeah, he has been legit MVP Yelich so far, and that makes everything else go more smoothly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, Contreras has seemed to have found his power earlier than he did last season too, which I think helps early compared to what he was doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to Yelich, it is a case of he is looking like MVP Yelich, at least to this point. And yeah, we do have to hope that the back holds up, but this is kind of what we've been waiting for, and it's especially he is attacking balls on the inside half of the zone and powering them to right field, and that was something we saw so seldom over the past, my God, like 4 years now at this point, that it is sort of remarkable to see it turn back around this way.
Yep, he has more home runs that count than that don't, so that's a good sign so far. Launch angle is 11.7, which honestly for him is incredible. That would be the highest of his career, by just a hair over the last MVP season. So who knows if this will keep up all season. You know, he is an older guy. Nagging injuries sometimes prevent things like this from happening, but the approach looks better, so I think there's at least a halfway decent chance this does stick as long as he's actually healthy enough to do it.
This is the most optimistic I've been about him in a while. And of course, we're sitting here dealing with the back issue as lingering over all of this. But yeah.
Keith Keskinen says it's unlikely the Brewers can maintain this level of production offensively. However, even if they consistently get 70 to 80% of their current production, they should be one of the best offenses in the NL, right?
Okay, well, it's not unlikely that they maintain this. It's impossible that they maintain this.
Yeah, this is a tear.
Right, and agreed. It's because there's just a bunch of unsustainable individual performances going into this. William Contreras is a good hitter. He's not a 191 OPS plus hitter because that's like Barry Bonds territory. Okay, so he's not that. You know, Bryce Terang may have made substantial improvements off of what he was last year. He's not going to put up a 159 OPS plus this year.
No, he is not.
Because that's legitimate MVP territory. You know,
that seems to be the most like straight up good fortune and luck so far in the spring.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Terang is definitely the luckiest in the lineup by a country mile.
Well, Blake Perkins is also off to a very lucky start too, but he hasn't played as much. So that's
He's only got 26 plate appearances. That just happens sometimes.
Yeah, his 145. I mean, and there are some guys like Jackson Chourio now is down to an 81. He's been struggling for a little bit here, which is kind of, you know, you expect those things to happen. But, you know, so there's that. And like Sal Frelick's 114, I think that's a bit on the high side, but you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Sal Frelick ended up putting up like a 105 to a 110 this year. That wouldn't surprise me at all. So I think that, you know, Rhys Hoskins 134, that's a little bit higher than what we were expecting, but you know, we brought him in to be, you know, a I don't know, 120 ish guy, 120 to 130 guy. So he's a little bit on the high side of that, but yeah, this team, like, Willie Adames is off to a very good start, but, you know, it's, again, it's not insane. 145 is higher than you expect for him, but, you know, he's put up 120s before, so it's, this is not, like, completely outside of the realm of possibility. But, yeah, Christian Yelich is not going to go 217. 117% better than the league average? No, that's not going to happen. So
Yelich, what was his MVP OPS plus?
He was, like around 170.
170? Okay, yep. So that is high. That'll come down. I think the main thing is that, like, the good hitters will probably all come down just a hair to their normal ranges. Like, Yelich, MVP Yelich will probably end up, if he is MVP Yelich all season, at that, like 165, 170. And that's still an optimistic projection. And I think that's really the main thing here. And so the question, yeah, if they get 80% of what this is now, I think that's still a very high-level offense. That's everybody playing, I think, at high sample size levels at their sort of upper projections for the most part. So I think that's kind of what you would expect if that does happen. And that's, I think, pretty possible. Like, you know, Adames and Contreras coming down a bit, but still being, you know, well above 100 in the 120s will make this a good offense, along with Yelich and with what everybody else is turning in. So, yeah. And I think that's the main thing to keep in mind when they do come back and they start scoring like 5 and 6 runs a game instead of double digits every game, that's still good production. And so far, this is a good sign. Like, this is better than the opposite happening, and it is a good sign of things to come, that people's approaches are good, and that when luck comes back to earth a little bit, they'll still all be very good hitters.
Yeah, so to get back into his actual question, because I actually kind of skipped ahead to the next question a little bit there when we were talking about individual players. So last year, the Brewers put up a 92 WRC plus, and like right now they're at a, you know, obviously, you know, completely unsustainable 127. So 27% better than the league average. The only team that's better than them in that category is, actually, there's two teams. Atlanta's at 130 and Houston's at 129. So obviously unsustainable, but I think this team can probably, I wouldn't be shocked if they were in the, you know, a little bit over 100 range, if they were in the 100 to 105 range, which is a substantial improvement from where they were over the course of last year, right? That's a, it's a significant step forward. It's going to involve a lot of regression. And I think that when he says to, like, if they can be like 70, what do you say, 70 to 80% of their current production, that's kind of what that would be, right? Like, is a little bit, maybe a touch above average. But you have to remember, to get down to that point, there's going to be long runs here where they are well below average. So, I mean, it's coming. You know it's coming. It's baseball. That's how baseball works. We're going to have a long run of that at some point, probably sooner rather than later. But even when that comes, I still think the floor on this offense is higher than what they had last year. I kind of went through last year and was trying to pick out, when we got to that 10-game sample, once we were at 10, I went through and tried to look at 10-game samples from 2023 to see like what their best 10-game run was, because the Brewers have done this, you know, over 13 games now, and it's a 127. The highest I could find was like a 10-game run of like 118 in 2023. So I think already we have seen this offense this year be better than the offense was at any point last year, which you're all saying, well, duh. Yeah, that obviously right now what we've seen is better than what we saw at any point during last year. But yeah, I think the floor here is higher. It's just, we're going to get an adjustment to take this down because they're not this good. I mean, they're just, we know they're not, but they're still, I think, a substantially improved from where they were last year.
And again, it's helped that they've had the fortune to score a ton of runs in games where the pitching staff has been mediocre to poor, at least as far as the starts, and they've been able to like win in like football scores, basically.
They've had some of that. They've also had their 11-1s.
So, oh yeah, yeah, definitely. Mix. But I'm just saying, like, you know, that's also going to flip, where you don't have that good fortune of, you know, you score 6 runs when the pitching staff gives up 7 instead.
Yes.
And oh, we absolutely can kind of see a rough, there are some signs of a rough run coming, I think, with the pitching staff.
Yeah. Sneaking in a few wins, like before Miley got back in the rotation, is probably one of the more positive developments that we did have. It was a good time for that. Like, the pitching staff has certainly been taxed. I'm sure we'll get to it. But they also might start, like, having this offensive start now is good because we may start to actually improve that with some health in the not-too-distant future. So all good there.
So we kind of went over some of Michael Parr's questions. Yeah, regression is inevitable. Paul, is regression the one inevitability in life?
Yes, it is. It really is.
We all regress.
Yep.
Did we catch all of his?
I mean,
he was asking if you see anybody else progressing as well. Is there anybody that's underperformed that you're kind of waiting to get going?
Yeah, I mean, I already kind of mentioned it, but Jackson Chourio, I think, is going to be better than an 81 OPS plus. He's at a 658 OPS right now. I think he's going to be better than that.
Well, it is the sort of fate of the right-handed hitter. Jackson Chourio has only faced four lefty plate appearances this year, so almost no platoon advantage at all this year so far for him, which, you know, that hurts. And, you know, he needs to get experience against both, but when that evens out a little bit, that will also boost his numbers, even if he's not taking a step forward. So he's had a bit of rough luck and, you know, he's 20 years old. But I agree with Ryan. He'll probably improve quite a bit.
And then there's just some guys where you go, okay, Gary Sanchez, we saw the light tower power on, was it Saturday when he hit that massive home run, or was it Friday?
That was Saturday, I think.
Yeah. So Gary Sanchez obviously has a lot more in that bat than what we've seen so far. And it's only been 17 plate appearances. And he's not been perfectly healthy. Like, he hasn't been... he hasn't been healthy. We'll see. I'm assuming he's probably going to start here on Sunday. So I think Sanchez, you know, he's not going to put up a 10 OPS plus. So we got that. Andrew Monasterio, I wasn't a big believer in, but he's not a negative 31 OPS.
No,
plus.
He's not.
So there's some bench guys. Jake Bowers. Jake Bowers did hit a home run yesterday, and it was a good home run. I mean, that was a legitimate, because he was hitting that over the big wall at over and right at Camden now, is right at that part where the wall starts to get big. And I think he's not necessarily great, but he's not a 54 OPS plus. And if he doesn't improve, they're going to find somebody else who is better than him to take those plate appearances away from him. So, like, those sorts of things, there are some spots on the roster where they can improve. It's just that those are probably mostly bench spots at this point. So...
yeah, honestly, everybody in the starting lineup there's not a lot of room for improvement there. Even Sal Frelick, who started pretty slowly, has, like, rocketed up in terms of just production. I think we might end up seeing a little bit more, a tad more power out of him, and maybe just a hair less on the OBP side. But, I mean, in the aggregate, 114 OPS out of him is, or OPS plus, is about right, I think.
Yeah, that's, again, yeah, it's kind of in the right neighborhood. I think maybe a touch high, but I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up at 114 for the year. That wouldn't be super shocking. So it's maybe a touch higher than where I would put the median point, which is probably, you know, more like 105, 110. But yeah, it's not crazy.
It's, you know, it's kind of interesting to compare Frelick versus Terang, you know, because they're both hitters that don't have a ton of power. But I think you could see in Frelick more where he at least has the approach and ability to spray the ball in a way that Terang doesn't, even if he's not hitting with the power. Because Terang's, you know, again, we were talking about luck. Terang, it's just so many, you know, dying quails out there that just kind of fall into open spots, that Frelick's at least shooting them down the line and stuff like that in a way that Terang just hasn't done, which, again, is where that regression is, you know, something we're waiting for.
Yeah, Frelick's Statcast numbers are better than what you see from Bryce Terang. Like, they're not, they're not sparkling, but they're better. Oh, actually, off this year, off to a really, he's first percentile in barrel percentage.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah, he's off to a slower start this year than last year. He was better. So impeccable sweet spot chase and whiff percentiles, but. And above averaging K's and walks, but not stinging the ball as hard as I think he did last year. I got to look at it, but we have so little sample from last year, it's hard to know for sure exactly. But yeah, he was definitely, okay, not not overly great in terms of stinging the ball, but it does seem like.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't hit the ball hard, but there's definitely a difference between his approach and
Terrain. Yes, there is.
So we did do some injury talk earlier. It was mostly on the minor league side. Any updates on the major league side that you wanted to hit?
Yeah, I mean, we also talked a little bit about Yelich, and there was a question about that later.
That one is forever. That's, yeah, forever. To the end of time. As long as Yelich is on the roster, we'll talk about his back.
Yep, get out the heating pad and hope things go well.
Yeah. So Garrett Mitchell's on track to come back right around June 1st, it sounds like. That's going relatively well. Devin Williams is looking at around the All-Star break still at this point. Who was the other one? We had Taylor Clark, late May. From his meniscus surgery that he had to have. So that will be helpful because they're just going to need to continually run more guys through the roster. We talked about that a little bit. By the way, that rainout on Thursday, that could not have been more perfectly timed for this team. Like, that was the platonic ideal of, like, getting a rainout at the right moment. Because
yep.
They were in the midst of 13 straight days of playing with games, and that was the seventh day of 13. It allowed them to reset their bullpen, and any worry that we might have had that the offense would cool off with the off day, well, they scored 11 runs each of the next 2 days, so that wasn't a concern. So, yeah, that was like the perfect timing for that to happen and allowed them to reset, but they are going to have to run the way that this is working with them not getting big distance out of a lot of their starters. They're going to have to run a shuttle if through the minor leagues, and Taylor Clark is going to need to be a big part of that. So getting him back sooner rather than later, definitely helpful.
Yeah.
Patreon questions. Adam Post, Forza Atalanta.
Oh,
sorry, Ryan.
Hey, you should be saying sorry to you too. You are also a Liverpool fan. And speaking of Liverpool, this game has been craptastic so far. So
did you see the one goal that was called back? They could be down 2-0 right now.
Well, it wasn't called back. It was
disallowed.
Well, no, he just it didn't cross the line by like a millimeter.
I thought they had given it to him. I don't know.
They didn't give it to him in the run of play. They were waiting for the thing. But the other thing that happened, no, Liverpool's hit the post and had a crazy save made on their end as well. This is just like a street brawl right now. This is gross.
And we still have an Everton game coming, right?
Yeah, that's at Goodison. One of the last Liverpool games at Goodison. Yeah, it's gonna be painful. So, anyways, let's get to the actual question.
Also, Adam Post asks: assuming the Brewers don't get hit by a bad case of the regressions, this is their best offense since when?
2018. Well, I don't know. When was the last good offense?
Well, this is where I'm legally required to mention that they were 10th in runs scored in 2022 when everybody hated their offense. So
I think they're better than that, though. I think we got to go back further.
I mean, it's going to be more appealing. And part of the reason that offense was better than what people remember is they actually were good with runners in scoring position. Something anybody who watched would tell you, no, they weren't. But no, they were better with runners in scoring position than they were overall that year.
Well,
that
what season did they have Grandal?
That was 2019. That was the rabbit ball year, though. That was 2019 was the peak of the bouncy ball. And so that was Yelich's last really good year. So that year, I think they were better in 18 than they were 19, though.
Just a hair. There's a chance we may have to go back really far for like to Melvin era teams. If they keep it up even a little bit, they'll be quite a bit better than any of the recent offenses, I think.
So you would be talking about like 2011 then?
Yeah, I think so.
Because, 2011 was really pretty good. People think of 2008 as being good offense. And actually, the offense was kind of crappy that year. It was,
That was one of Braun's worst seasons.
Or it was one of Fielder's worst seasons.
2011 wasn't good enough. I'm going to go back further.
2008, Fielder had the down year. Braun was pretty okay. It wasn't. He didn't follow up his rookie of the year with another season quite like it, but
yeah. No.
Fielder was the one who had like, and there was, it just in general, like by the end of that year in 2008, Hardy was struggling, but like Hardy, Hart, Weeks, none of those guys could lay off or hit the slider low and away.
I'm going to go with 2009. I think that's sort of the best of that era. They just didn't quite put it all together that year.
Was that the year Fielder hit 50 or was that 2007?
He had 46 home runs that year. Okay. He had a 1,014 OPS. But Casey McGee hit really well for some reason. Braun had a 937 OPS.
Okay.
You got Felipe Lopez had an 855 OPS.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a thing that happened. Ricky had a 125. That's a good season. I'm going to go with that.
Yeah. Well, 2009 was the second thumb injury for Weeks. And so he only played like, what, 50 games?
Oh, yeah, that's barely any. 162 plate appearances.
Boo. Yeah, he was breaking out. That was the when we were like, oh, Ricky Weeks is finally breaking out, and then the injury happened. But then he was good in 10-11
yep.
before and he then, got injured
And then
again.
He injured his ankle, because every time we were like, oh, this is it. This is Ricky Weeks. He's going to be a perennial all-star.
Yes.
And then tragedy strikes. So
yep.
We got a question from Michael Henk, who is, I don't know, would you say pulling out receipts? He definitely wants to go around and show the folks who have left this year what's going on in Milwaukee. Where does putting up back-to-back double-digit run performances in Burns' face rank in terms of early season satisfaction? Also, did Craig Counsell hate offense that much?
So taking the first part of this, it will be a lot better if they actually put it in Burns' face like while it's on the mound. While he's sitting and watching in the dugout, that's fine. It's good. I did thoroughly enjoy those games. But what would really make this good and perfect and special would be hammering Burns. That would be fantastic.
I disagree. Because Burns, I think, here's why. Burns chose his situation. And I think part of Burns, obviously money is one. But also, I think there's some expectation when you're picking whatever team you're going to go to, that you improve your situation, and the Brewers showing up and blasting the heck out of every other Oriole also makes me happy, because it means that Burns chose poorly.
Well, yeah, I mean, he didn't get to pick that he was.
He didn't get to pick. I was just realizing halfway through. Yeah.
Yeah. No. He will be picking his next.
He'll pick
team.
Later. Yeah.
Yeah. He'll pick, but also just
he did kind of pick by not wanting to be here. And not entertaining the idea that he would stick around.
And the Brewers did not send him to the worst situation either.
They did not. They could have.
No, yeah. He went to a great situation. This is perfect for him for a platform year. Pitching in that park. Now, pitching in that division isn't necessarily the best, but pitching in that park is really good now. That's one of the best pitcher's parks in baseball now that they've moved all the walls back and everything. But he also now can say, like, anybody who has any questions, if he has a good platform year this year, anybody who has any questions about, well, can he handle the spotlight? He was in little old Milwaukee, like, where nobody was paying attention. Can he handle the spotlight of playing in, like, the AL East? Well, that's going to get answered this year. So that actually does kind of help him from that perspective.
Yeah.
Burns is good. He
is good. He's very
good. He's going to do well in Baltimore. He's got the ego to play in those places. And that's not a knock on him saying he has the ego to do it, because if you're a starting pitcher and you're a great starting pitcher, you better have an ego, because you're on that mound alone.
Yes.
You know, you basically got to do it yourself. So, I mean, those guys are all going to be like that. So good luck to him. The game happens later today. So we're hoping he gets hammered by the Brewers. Oh, the Craig Counsell side. Yeah. We have to wait till May before we can have that direct matchup.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's mentioning, and this is a theme that's about to emerge here, is did Craig Counsell hate offense that much? I have seen some local hot takesters talking about this and talking about how, well, Craig Counsell was bad for the offense. Like, seriously, not making the jokes. It's one that we're all making the jokes. I'm making the jokes, too. We're all making the jokes. But to seriously say that, like, Craig Counsell was bad for the offense, I've seen a bunch of this. And that's what Mike is clearly tongue-in-cheek referencing here.
Yep.
And yeah, that's just funny. Like, have fun with the jokes. I'm having fun with the jokes too, but yeah, like don't start taking it seriously. Don't get high on your own supply here.
Yeah. Also, while the Brewers are first in runs per game in baseball at 6.69, the Cubs are third at 5.64. So the Cubs offense is doing just fine with Craig down there. And yeah, it's funny, but not true at all.
Right. And also that Cubs offense is doing, that's more what people kind of expected out of them. The Brewers, we can kind of say, like, is this an outlier? Are they just off to a hot start? Where the Cubs, it's like, yeah, that's probably what their offense should be doing. They're getting good performances, but especially once they got Bellinger back, it seemed like they had the pieces they needed to put up runs down there.
Yeah, I think it's still probably more than what you would expect. I'm looking at some of these performances.
Bellinger's actually been trash, by the way.
Has he been that bad? I've caught a couple of games where obviously when I'm watching, he does something well, and then I can sit and curse that he exists.
He's got a 54 OPS plus.
So. Is it that low?
Yeah.
Yeah, this Holy is shit. Actually, you know what? They're scoring runs despite, actually, they're doing the Craig Council thing. They're scoring runs despite most of their best hitters. Dansby Swanson, 105. Christopher Morel, 104. Ian Happ, 102. Seiya Suzuki has been legitimately good so far, 133. Michael Busch has been hitting out of his damn mind.
Yeah, he's been the story of the team so far.
I also didn't realize they had dropped a few. They're in a little bit more of a lull right now. What are they, 8-6?
Yeah, they're not on a super hot run right now.
They're not. They gave up that big comeback like a week or so ago, and it's been a little rough since then.
But they also have some guys who are, you know, well below where you'd expect. Nico Horner, Yan Gomes, they're not going to, you know, be down in the 37-54 range here. Oh, Cody Bellinger, 54. I expected huge regression from Cody Bellinger. I didn't expect him to go back to being bad Cody Bellinger. So, yeah. That's probably not going to happen. But... yeah, I think the thing about this is the Brewers are getting great performances and are scoring runs from that. The Cubs are getting mostly middling performances here, and they're scoring runs, which they must have some really, really good runners in scoring position numbers right now to be pulling this off. Or else they're just, the sequencing has to be immaculate for them because if they're scoring that much, because this is not that impressive.
Yeah. Nope.
Yeah, it was probably hurting Dansby Swanson. His last year, he got to play the Brewers early, and that, I think, padded his numbers, and he regressed. Yeah. Where this year, he hasn't gotten that bump to start with, so we'll see what happens there. We'll go through the next two real quick. Mattingly sideburns. What's more fun, Craig Council hitting curse or a Ricky Weeks hitting bump? And Jay Google says, was Craig wasting Pat Murphy's prime?
Absolutely love that, Jay. Thank you
for
tweeting that. Yes, Craig was wasting Pat Murphy's prime.
By the way, how what's our temperature on Murphy? I think we do a weekly check on him. Still just managing the staff, managing the pen, lineups. I mean,
he seems fine. Again, still detected no strategic issues out of him at all. He seems to be running things fine. And, you know, everybody, this clubhouse seems good. I have no complaints about Murphy. He seems like he's taking in whatever the front office is telling him to do and executing it properly, and seems to be fine so far.
Yeah, again, like I said last week, there's no discernible difference in how he's managing the pitching staff from what Craig would have done. Like, you can't look at anything that's happened and say, well, Craig wouldn't have done that. No, he would have done all of it. Like, that's just the way they're running things, which makes me wonder how much of it, like, is Chris Hook actually kind of, and maybe Chris Hook has been sort of running things on that end for a while. Like, I know he's a very trusted sort of person within it. Hopefully he gets a contract extension and they're able to keep him around for a while, though. Maybe we just end up going to Wade Miley at that point anyway, so who knows. But
okay, here's a question for you.
Yeah.
If Murphy's basically just doing what Council had done, is Murphy the platonic ideal of a manager that's 60 years old and square jawed for, you know, talk radio to look at, and then also executing what the front office wants so we can be happy with him? Like, is he the perfect
manager?
He
might be. That's a good call, because like, Rubes hated Council and like how much he was walking out to the mound and doing, making the changes and whatnot. And it's hard for Rubes to hate Murphy. Like, he looks like their coach in high school. So, yeah, that makes sense. It might be perfect.
I think there is something to that. He is beloved that way because he's, you know, the straight talker and he has manager face. He definitely has like resting manager face. He just looks like what a manager is supposed to look like, with, like you said, the square jaw and all that stuff. So yeah, that's, I think you're onto something there. But then again, most of those Rubes, whenever the team loses, which it's a baseball team, so it's going to lose, whenever the team loses, it's always the manager's fault to Rubes. And sure. So like that, that's,
I mean, that, yeah, that's not, yeah, that I'm not arguing that'll change, yeah, but I'm just saying he gets a little bit more of ability to work through some of those moments because he just has the look.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that. Yeah. Going back to the previous question from Mattingly Sideburns, the Ricky Weeks hitting bump is that's fantastic. That I love the idea of that. And I doubt that it has really much of anything to do with that because he's not the hitting coach. You know, they employ multiple hitting coaches, but he is, I think he's the rah-rah guy. We saw some shots in the dugout. I think he's the rah-rah guy. I think he's the guy who's helping keep everybody on, you know, an even keel and those sorts of things. So I think he's that, but I don't think I would necessarily ascribe the hitting bump to him.
I will. The man knows how to hit. It's all Ricky.
He does. The cheese for Wilson Contreras' wine. Maybe I'm just looking for it, but after Joey Ortiz hit that triple, is there any known correlation of players performing better against recently former teams?
I have not looked this up, but no, there's not. It's just that you notice it when it happens. That's all. It's one of those things. It's a selection bias thing. It sticks out when it happens. And so when you're looking for something, it'll show up. But it's definitely not the case. There's no way.
Right. And Joey Ortiz is off to a very solid start here to begin the season. He is putting up better numbers than, you know, we have any right to reasonably expect. 147 OPS plus 333, 438, 444. And he hasn't hit a home run yet. And he does have, we do know he has like legitimate big time power. Like it's in the bat and he's going to do that at some point. But so far it's just been, you know, like everybody else, there's sort of been a lot of balls falling in. So.
Yep.
Luke Roy Suitcase asks, have you noticed weaknesses in Churio's hitting approach that will need to, that he will need to fix before he reaches a higher level? I feel like he's letting hittable pitches go early right now. He could probably be a little more aggressive on the first or second pitch.
I feel like he is getting fooled by high stuff, but I haven't looked at where his weaknesses lie on like the Savant heat maps, which I'm trying to pull up right now. But that I feel like he was getting burned up high and having problems there.
Which, I mean, that's just an approach in the major leagues that I think everybody has to adjust to.
Yep.
I'll point to the strikeout rate, which is not surprisingly high, 29.6. He's almost at 30% K rate, which he has at times when he's first gotten to levels, sometimes had this issue where hitters are fooling him or pitchers are fooling him for a little while, and then he adjusts down and has generally improved this. But it's not surprising that he would be striking out, you know, more than what he generally has done. Last year, his strikeout rate started high in AA, and he dropped it down to an 18.4 by the end of the year. So that's going to come down, but it's going to need to come down. And because he's swinging and missing too much right now, he's just, yeah, there's a bit much of that right now.
Price Trozen says, if your last name is McCann, are you automatically assigned the role of fun cop?
What is it about that?
On a serious side, I keep remembering the phrase you guys use, nobody ever used to have a bad back. Do you anticipate a lot of load management for Yelly this season to keep him fresh, or maybe a move to more time at DH? I'm loving the production, but his long-term health is key.
Yeah, probably a lot of load management. And one of the problems with the back is that DHing doesn't actually help very much. The way you hurt your back primarily is torque, is swinging, is the rotation that you need to produce home run power. And so it's probably more days off than DHing. I mean, fielding is some nominal additional stress on everything, but it's not like Yelich is getting killed out there in left field on a day-to-day basis. It's the swing that hurts the back. So, yeah, I think that you'll see him get a fair number of days off, as is typical with guys as they start to get his age and start to have little nagging injuries like this. That will be common. Don't be surprised when Yelich has quite a few of them.
Am I imagining, or did he say that it tightened up when he was running, though, this time specifically?
I missed that. If he did, I mean, it's possible. It happens.
I think it was when he was running the bases on Friday night, that it tightened up and he took himself out of the game. And they're trying to, like, get ahead of it this time. This was more of a preventative thing, I think, than anything else. They were like, before this actually gets bad, let's put the brakes on it. So that's probably just copium, but whatever.
Well, I think more of it is like just because he's DHing doesn't mean it's a day off. That's, I think, part of what Paul.
You also run the bases when you DH, you know?
Yeah. That's, yep, that is also true. Yeah. Like it's not going to keep you perfect and healthy forever. But yeah, this is a weird situation where, well, we've gotten used to this with Yelich. Yeah. It's just, this is just what it is with him, and they're going to have to manage it. And so as soon as there's anything wrong, it's time to shut him down and just let him rest and, you know, try to keep it from getting potentially worse beyond that point. So, yeah.
My only lemonade. How long before we are allowed to apply a team nickname? Ian Pomplin popped up right away and said, I suggest Murphy's Mashers.
I can't do better than that. I mean, it fits in with the Bambi's Bombers, with the whole our whole franchise aesthetic here. So, yeah, I got nothing better than that.
Yeah, I feel like Mashers is the default. We got to workshop this over the week. A little more creativity, I think, would be warranted. There aren't any good Pat ones I can think of, though. So I think Murphy's Mashers is the best we got for the moment.
I mean, if it was all a bunch of like big softball dudes, which this is not, you could go with like Murphy's Monsters, like as in physical, but they're
not.
Part
of the problem is Harvey's Wallbangers is like the platonic ideal of this kind of name. And you don't run into those that often. And there's not really one like that for this.
How about Patty's Poppers?
Ooh. Yeah, so are we like legally required to go with alliteration here? Is that the deal?
That is, well, you know, that's probably why Harvey Wallbangers is good, is because it's also not an alliteration. I think
it's got to be alliteration or a reference to something.
Oh, the Harvey's Wallbangers? Yeah, it's a drink. Harvey yes, Wallbanger
it,
was
it has to be alliteration or a reference.
Oh, got it,
to
got
something.
It, got it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was going to say that was very popular back in the day. What is, isn't it like a screwdriver with something?
It's got Galliano in it, one of the worst liquors.
Okay. So. Okay, that's what it is.
Chad Ferris, regarding the discussion last week on the pitch clock and increase in pitching injuries, could a solution be to increase the roster size by one or two spots?
So this is what everybody doesn't want, and this is like what people are worried about, because if I think Chad is onto something here, if he's actually thinking what I want to do is decrease pitcher injuries, like, yes, this would be a legitimate solution, but people don't want this because what they really want is for starters to start throwing longer than right. they have been. And this would do the opposite of that. To add more yeah. pitchers is just going to encourage teams not to pitch starters deeper.
Yeah.
And so
I actually think that solution would actively hurt. I don't think it would help. I think it would actually cause more injuries, because I think the literature on pitcher injuries is pretty clear at this point that it's not how long you're pitching. It's not like pitch counts are pretty much worthless. They really are. Like the problem with the Kerry Wood example isn't so much that Kerry Wood threw 160 whatever pitches. It's that he threw 160 pitches as hard as he possibly could. And it's the hard as he possibly could that seems to be the issue these days. It is everybody going into – I'm not going to blame – so I'm going to sound like I'm blaming Driveline, but I'm not. What I'm doing is blaming the amount of information available. Like if you are a pitcher, you can go into the lab – and you can take a look at exactly what your speed and spin rates are on every pitch and craft your delivery so that you get this super high spin rate and speed every pitch. And it is both bad for your longevity to be going max effort and with like crazy movement every time. And it's somewhat intoxicating. If you go, you know, if you're suffering and not getting the movement you expect, you can go and fix that. There's so much information available to guys to, you know, hit those high-end metrics every single time they go out there that it's killer, and it's a competition that just breeds in on itself over and over again, because if you aren't throwing as hard as you can every time, there's a good chance that you won't be in the majors very long. So it is sort of the deal we always talked about with, like, adding a cut fastball, which I'm not even sure is, in a vacuum that bad for you, but it's the... it's the deal that you make of, hey, do you want to do this and maybe pitch 1 or 2 years in the majors or maybe longer, because we're good at fixing UCLs now, by throwing these insane pitches, or do you want to try a more sustainable approach and like maybe top out at double A, if that? And I don't think there is a good solution to this. I think you to fix pitcher injuries would require something truly radical, like taking the seams off the ball or coming up with a elbow protecting prosthetic or something along those lines. You're not going to be able to fix this with roster construction or anything of the like.
Yeah, I want to jump on a couple things that you said and take them a little bit further, because first off, this idea that that pitchers, if they're not throwing their hardest, aren't going to be in the majors very long. I think we're seeing an object lesson in this in DL Hall right now. I think you are watching it happen, because DL Hall is, I went and looked at this yesterday during the game when people were talking about, well, his fastball, JR mentioned his fastball hasn't been as advertised tonight. I looked at it and I looked back at what his fastball was as a reliever over the last few years. He's taking like a couple miles, 2 to 3 miles an hour off his fastball right now in order to pitch deeper into games. He's doing, like, that's really the only explanation I can come up with here, is he's not throwing at max effort so that he can actually go deeper into games. And
also, it is April, so I mean, velocity sound, like, let's not be
well
shocked.
But it also wasn't necessarily true in previous years. Early on, his best velocity readings I saw were early on, I think, in April at one point. So, like, in other years, he actually was throwing, like, when he first got called up, his first major league debut, he was throwing at his hardest that he's ever thrown, which, like, you would understand that that's, like, a thing. But, no, the point here is that, like, I think DL Hall is an object lesson in this, is that he is not at his taking something off to preserve himself to go deeper. He's not really good enough to get big league hitters out. And I think they're going to have to pull the plug on this unless I did put the caveat out there when I was talking about this on Twitter, like, unless they find something, unless the pitching lab comes up with some other way for him to get hitters out, like some wonderfully wicked breaking pitch. But that then gets into the second point of this, which, Paul, you also mentioned here, which is guys throwing pitches that hurt them. What was it? One of the Tommy John guys this week was saying, one of the doctors who does this said, you show me an MRI and I'll tell you whether or not they throw a sweeper. And
I saw Pedro talking about it on MLB Network, that he was like, the sweeper is one of the issues causing a lot of these elbow injuries, just because of how much stress it puts on it when you throw it, and so many guys are throwing it
right. And it's not just that pitch, there's other pitches. I remain convinced that, you know, whatever you want to call the airbender, I think it's a screwball, or it has a very screwball,
it looks
features.
Like a screwball. I think that's fair. I know they call it a changeup, but it has that movement. That's
right,
what it does.
Yes, it has that reverse sort of spin on it that, you know, goes back the other direction. That those pitches, these pitches that guys are throwing, are hurting them. And I always think back to, if this is probably well more than a decade now, was Keith Law talking about this in a chat, saying that he thinks there should be somebody in every organization who goes to a pitcher who's going to wash out. They're at the point, you know, they're like 24, 25. They've gotten to the point where they're not going to be a big league pitcher. And the person goes to him and says, look, I have a deal with the devil you can make. I can teach you how to throw a screwball, and it might get you to the big leagues for a while, but it's also going to make your elbow explode, and you're probably going to have surgery as a result of throwing this thing for a while. Do you want to take this chance? And that's always stuck with me, and I don't think it's just the screwball. I think you could go across the board with a bunch of different pitches, but this seems to be the thing. Everybody is... they're spending so much time in these pitching labs manipulating and figuring out how to throw certain pitches. And yes, you can make your arm do that thing, but how sustainable it is for the long term is questionable. I heard Britt Giroli talking about this on, I guess it's not the 3-0 show anymore, but she was talking with Eno and with DVR about this. And she was saying that, like, Max Scherzer, when he would roll out a new pitch, he was doing it over years. He would slowly work on it and slowly add it to his repertoire. Now guys can sometimes be working on it on a throw day in the pitching lab, and then 2 days later, they're out there, or 3 days later, they're out there throwing it in a big league game. And that probably is leading to some of this, where guys aren't necessarily working on the sustainability of a pitch. They're just saying, what can I throw that's going to be nasty, that's going to have wonderful break, that's going to make me a better pitcher right now? And so I think that's part of the deal with the devil that you make by having a pitching lab is, you know, guys are going to start throwing some stuff that maybe isn't the best for their arms.
That's right. Do you want to hear my wild solution to it, by the way?
Oh, let's go.
So I'm actually always been surprised this doesn't happen just naturally, but I kind of get it. I think all pitchers against same side batters should throw sidearm, and against opposite side batters should throw overhand. And this sidearm is less taxing on your arm, generally speaking. And sidearm works very, very well against people who are not enjoying the platoon advantage. So that's what I would work on, have my pitchers work on if I was teaching them. They would all hate it, but that's what I would do.
Well, there's something along those lines. Yovani Gallardo used to change his arm slot a lot. Like, there were times when he was almost, I don't want to say like...
It was like 45, yeah.
Yeah, he went between straight up and down and like down to 45 quite a bit. And every one of those is sort of a different pitch, right? Like, you could throw the same pitch, but from a different arm slot, it's going to act differently. So, yeah. But then we're talking about Gallardo, and he's not exactly the picture of like sustainable health either, because he was
He didn't throw true sidearm. Like I want to see like true like Hobie Milner stuff out there. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, Gallardo was not efficient by any means, and you know, also through the years, it always seems like there's a new pitch that's, you know, shredding elbows. I remember back when like the splitter was the one everybody was trying to throw, and that was doing damage to elbows. But you always had like Roger Clemens out there throwing it. And he was able to just keep going. Yeah. So, I mean, there's always that new pitch, that new breaking pitch that, you know, kind of takes the league by storm. And then after a season or two, everybody goes, oh, this is how it's ruining your elbow. So,
yeah, there is one other solution, of course, which is steroids. But that's probably not going to be allowed.
Yes. Or you deaden the ball. So that way pitchers can throw it over the plate without getting punished. And they don't have to be max effort at all times.
I still think competition drives you to throw it as hard as you can.
It does, but I think if there was more of an emphasis on like the ball's not going to leave the park at any moment. Like basically if Bryce Terang is a zero home run guy because that's legitimately the amount of power he has, you know, there used to be guys like that. Remember watching Jim Gantner? Like he'd pop his one home run a season and it was incredible because you're like, I can't believe he did it. There used to be an era where there were guys like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and this, we talked about this a little bit last week, that Sandy Koufax has talked about this, that it used to be that you only had to worry about like a few hitters in every lineup. And otherwise you were just pacing yourself for runners in scoring position situations to bear down. And you can't do that now because everybody can pop home runs. Like everybody in a lineup can pop home runs. So it's a different game. It has substantively changed. Hitters are better than they used to be, even if people don't want to cop to that. Like hitters are just better than they used to be. They're forcing pitchers to be better on a pitch by pitch basis because of that.
Okay, Steve S. Let's go less serious this week with the core starting to develop with this team. I'm curious, who is your personal favorite brewer right now, and what is your criteria on how you choose a favorite? Is it an affinity for a certain position, the most famous player on the team like Yelly, a player with some passion like Adamas or Reese, a player with an exceptional tool or skill like Devin, an underdog like Monasterio, or something else? For me, I've always gravitated towards the guys I perceive to be decent humans outside of baseball, like Brent Suter, Casey McGee, and Solomon Torres.
Yeah, I'm looking at the roster right now, and I think I can fairly say that it's Wade Miley at the moment, because he's just Wade Miley, like all of his Wade Miley-ness.
That's fair. I think for me right now, it's actually Yelich, because he's doing all the stuff that I said he should do. Makes me happy personally. However, I will also give a shout out to both Adamas and Rhys Hoskins for starting numerous fights, which they seem to really thrive off when that happens. So I also am a fan. Nobody's really gotten hurt, which is good. But the getting under people's skin has been a nice change of pace as well.
And they're not doing it like, I guess the Rhys Hoskins slide, we talked about that being sort of a borderline, not the nicest thing, but really like what drove that was then the insane reaction, overreaction of of McNeil to it, right? Like, and then the Adames thing, like, he didn't provoke that at all. He may have escalated it, but like, James McCann was in there putting his finger in his chest and pointing at him and lecturing him about something, which like Adames wouldn't even say what it was. Like, they just let it, they let that go and didn't tell the media what exactly they were talking about. But yeah, he was lecturing him about something. I think that's that's provocation. But the fact that Adames didn't back down, he definitely took it to that next level. He's like, no, you're not going to talk to me like this. Like, screw you. So yeah, that was definitely a fun thing. And the Edge is, it does seem new. Like, this, I don't recall teams under Craig playing with an Edge like this. And the thing with playing on the Edge is you have to be careful not to go over that edge too. Like, you could exist sort of on that plane, but it's easy to go over it. So they got to be careful to keep it sort of reined in here, and not go too far with it. But yeah, it has been fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, we're a William Contreras household because my son was playing MLB The Show, and he was hitting dingers with Contreras, so that became his favorite player. So from a video game, which I don't know. Do you guys remember doing that growing up? You'd play one of those games, you know, NBA or an MLB game. And well, what's it called? Tecmo Super Bowl would have been a classic example of, oh, I'm using Bo Jackson, so I'm a huge Bo Jackson fan. Or something, something like that.
No, the original Tecmo Bowl. Yeah, like the Bo Jackson thing, or just constantly throwing to Jerry Rice and John Taylor. That was
putting Sterling Sharp at running back. Yeah. I mean, I used to know every NHL player for a period of 2 years from 1994 to 1996.
I was going to say NHL 94, yep.
And now I don't know any NHL players except for Connor Bedard. That's it. That's my extent of my knowledge.
Because you use that thing. If you used Jágr and Lemieux on Pittsburgh to execute that move in front of the goal, you could score basically at will and just rack up just like dozens of goals a game. It was great.
I played with Edmonton. They had Doug Waite and Bob Beers on their starting lineup, which is fun. those also go very well together.
Okay, my only lemonade. No performance-related questions for me. The Brewers are a super fun team to watch right now. I was looking at the schedule and noted that AmFam is hosting another Bark at the Park night this year. This event has always baffled me, and I'm a dog lover who with two rescues. What are we doing here? Isn't it just a PR disaster in waiting? I stopped going to dog parks years ago because, let's face it, some people suck at having a dog. Curious to know your thoughts and or experience with this night. P.S. Bark at the Park is on May 9th versus St. Louis, and sort of laughing at the idea of Cardinals fans arriving without this knowledge.
So I've been to Bark at the Park at, it was Miller Park at the time before. I think I've been to multiple ones, and I never noticed any issues. I do remember them having, like, they set up some like puppy pad areas like you see in airports for the dogs to go and take care of their business. They set up some of those kind of back in the back sort of area of the concourse, but I didn't notice any problems. I didn't see any, like, there was no biting that I was aware of. I don't know. I think, don't these things exist so they can put the cute dogs on TV and just be like, aw, because everybody loves a dog. So that's like, that is why this exists, right?
No, this exists so they can pick out Hank replacements.
Thank you, Andy.
No, nothing else?
No, that's all. That's the reason. How else are you going to do it?
You have to audition your Hanks.
Yeah,
there you go.
Open Hank auditions.
They trot them out. It's like America's Got Talent or something
like
that.
And if they do come up to you and they pick your dog out to be a Hank, just remember what happens to Hanks before you actually volunteer for it.
Oh, yeah. So, that's what we got this week. Do we have any patrons we need to shout out? Or are we just encouraging more people to sign up?
We do not. We have not had anybody join in a little bit.
The season started, so everybody got in when they needed to get all the new podcasts. But exactly. You know, again, for the football people, there is more football content coming, so it's good. Draft. Good time to join there.
Draft is big. Draft is its own thing. It's like its own sport. It should have happened 2 weeks ago. At this point, I'm kind of sick of it, honestly. But we'll roll into it.
Yeah. What is their motivation for doing it that way? I don't get it.
For doing it like as a big giant party?
No. For waiting till later. It used to be earlier, right? Like, it didn't used to be like at the end of April. It used to be more
it's usually been towards the end of April.
Yeah, I think it's usually consistently about the same time. It's usually a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 or 4 weeks after baseball starts. I feel like that's about right. So, it's just, they get so much pub. This is just free advertising and free content that they don't have to pay for. That's why. I think they drag it out even longer if they could.
Yeah. Well, MLB has pushed back their draft ridiculously to the All-Star break at this point, which is a huge pain in the ass for everybody, and nobody likes it except for MLB for marketing purposes. That's why they're doing it the way they're doing it, but nobody actually appreciates it from a team-building standpoint. So,
sure, it's for the people who create content. It gives them time to put out lists and refine lists and lists to counter other people's lists, because we all know that's what gains traction online.
That's right.
It's lists.
It is. Anything else before we wrap this up?
No, I think that about covers it this week.
Yeah, we're good. Brewers are in a good place, so we'll end on a positive note there. As a reminder, if you sign up to become a patron at patreon.com/mketailgate, you get priority every week, and you heard all of the great questions we had this week. So that'll do it for this week on Milwaukee's Tailgate. James should be back next week, right?
I think James is back next week, but I think Paul is out. Aren't you, Paul?
Oh,
I believe that is correct. Yes.
Yeah. So I think we're going to talk to Spencer and see about getting him in here for Paul. So
these chairs keep rotating. It's like a Brewers pitching staff that shuttles working back and forth for everybody, right?
You got it.
So check. Squad. What's that?
I'm the shuttle squad.
There we go. So, let's keep our winning ways going, and we'll talk to everybody next week.